Alright, we are starting Chapter 7 of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of, and the Goblet of Fire, called Bagman and Crouch. Harry disentangled himself from Ron and got to his feet. They'd arrived on what it appeared to be a deserted stretch of misty moor. In front of them was a pair of tired and grumpy-looking wizards, one of whom was holding a large gold watch, the other a thick roll of parchment and a quill. Both were dressed as muggles, though very inexpertly. The man with the watch wore a tweed suit with thigh-length galoshes. His colleague, kilt and a poncho. "Morning, Basil," said Mr. Weasley, picking up the boot and handing it to the kilted wizard, who threw it in a large box of used portkeys behind him. Harry could see an old newspaper, an empty drinks can, and a punctured football. "Hello there, Arthur," said Basil wearily. "Not on duty, eh? It's all right for some. We've been here all night. You'd better get back out of the way. We've got a big party coming from the Black Forest at 5:15. Hang on, I'll find your campsite."
I know where that is because I had to identify it on one of my 124 questions, which I got 100%
wrong. Really? The Black Forest? Where is it?
It is in the southwestern part of Germany.
Very good. I think they call it Schwarzwald.
Schwarzwald?
For Black Forest.
Wald is forest?
Wald is forest.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I played a Schumann suite called Waldseinen. I played one of them for you, I think. Forest Scenes. It's really cool. It's very, like poetic, all the titles of the little thing, of the poems, of the different pieces in the suite, are really poetic. So it's kind of cool. Anyways, all right, Weasley. He consulted the parchment list. About a quarter of a mile's walk over there, first field he come to, sites managed, managers called Mr. Roberts. Diggory, second field, ask for Mr. Payne. "Thanks, Basil," said Mr. Weasley, and he beckoned everyone to follow him. They set off across the deserted moor, unable to make out much of anything through the mist. After about 20 minutes, a small stone cottage next to a gate swam into view. Beyond it, Harry could just make out the ghostly shapes of hundreds and hundreds of tents, rising up the gentle slope of the large field toward a dark wood on the horizon. They said goodbye to the Diggorys and approached the cottage. A man was standing in the doorway, looking out at the tents. Harry knew at a glance that this was the only real muggle for several acres. When he heard their footsteps, he turned his head to look at them. "Morning," said Mr. Weasley brightly. "Morning," said the muggle. "Would you be Mr. Roberts?" "Aye, I would," said Mr. Roberts. "And who are you?" "Weasley, 2 tents booked a couple days ago." "Aye," said Mr. Roberts, consulting a list tacked to the door. "You've got a space up by the wood there, just the one night?" "That's it," said Mr. Weasley. "You'll be paying now, then," said Mr. Roberts. "All right, certainly," said Mr. Weasley. He retreated a short distance from the cottage and beckoned Harry toward him. "Help me, Harry," he muttered, pulling a roll of muggle money from his pocket and starting to peel the notes apart. "This one's a 10. Yeah, yes, I can see the number on it now. So this is a 5. "A 20, Harry corrected him in an undertone, uncomfortably aware of Mr. Roberts trying to catch every word. "Ah, yes, so it is. I don't know, these little bits of papers." "You foreign?" said Mr. Roberts, as Mr. Weasley returned with the correct notes. "Foreign?" repeated Mr. Weasley, puzzled. "You're not the first one who's had trouble with money," said Mr. Roberts, scrutinizing Mr. Weasley closely. "I had 2 try to pay me with great gold coins the size of hubcaps 10 minutes ago." "Did you really?" said Mr. Weasley nervously. Mr. Roberts rummaged around in the tin for some change. "Never been this crowded," he said suddenly, looking out over the misty field again. Hundreds of pre-bookings. People usually just turn up. It's weird that they're going through muggles, right?
Yeah, I don't understand why.
Especially since they got all the other stuff set up.
And I mean, like, why would I don't know,
Yeah,
whatever.
it's weird.
Especially like maybe a muggle who like knows about the wizarding world.
Right, that's what I thought
You
he was
know,
gonna
like
be.
yeah, me too, but someone who's not even weird. Especially like it's a game we play on broomsticks. Like, what the fuck is he gonna
Right. Well,
think?
presumably they're a distance away, but you're right.
Pardon my
Anyways,
language.
what's it?
I said pardon my language. I didn't mean to say the F word, sorry.
It's okay. I didn't even notice you did. Is that right? Said Mr. Weasley, his hand held out for change, but Mr. Roberts didn't give it to him. I see, he said thoughtfully. People from all over. Loads of foreigners. Not just foreigners. Weirdos, you know. There's a bloke walking around in a kilt and a poncho. Shouldn't he? Said Mr. Weasley anxiously. It's like some sort of, I don't know, some sort of rally, said Mr. Roberts. They all seem to know each other, like a big party. At that moment, a wizard in plus fours appeared out of thin air next to Mr. Roberts' front door. Obliviate, he said sharply, pointing his wand at Mr. Roberts. Instantly, Mr. Roberts' eyes slid out of focus. His hand unknitted, and a look of dreamy unconcern fell over his face. Harry recognized the symptoms of one who had just had his memory modified. A map of the campsite for you, said Mr. Roberts placidly to Mr. Weasley, and your change. Thanks very much, said Mr. Weasley. The wizard in plus fours accompanied them toward the gate to the campsite.
What is plus
I
fours?
don't know. That's weird. I'm not sure what they mean by that. He looked exhausted. His chin was blue with stubble, and there were deep purple shadows under his eyes. Once out of earshot of Mr. Roberts, he muttered to Mr. Weasley, "Been having a lot of trouble with him. Needs a memory charm 10 times a day to keep him happy. And Ludo Bagman's not helping. Trotting around talking about bludgers and quaffles at the top of his voice. Not to worry about inter-muggle security." So that's what they're doing, I guess. "Blimey, I'll be glad when this is all over. See you later, Arthur." He disapparated. "I thought Mr. Bagman was the head of magical games and sports," said Ginny, looking surprised. "He should know better than talk about bludgers near muggles, shouldn't he?" "He should," said Mr. Weasley, smiling, and leading toward the gates in the campsite. "But Ludo's always been a little bit, well, lax about security. You couldn't wish for a more enthusiastic head of the sports department, though. He played Quidditch for England himself, you know. And he was the best beater the Wimborne Wasps ever had." They trudged up the misty field between the long rows of tents. Most of them looked ordinary. Their owners had clearly tried to make them.
Oh, you know what I just figured out?
What?
I always like wondered what was the deal with like the Chudley cannons and like stuff like that, you know, because Ron cheers for them. But then they have all of these countries, you know, for this. This is like their Olympics. Whereas like, you know, we have regional sports teams for things that we cheer for, but then when it's time to represent our country, we pick like the best athletes and certain things and stuff. Like that's what they do, you know. Cool.
Well, it's sort of, and that's what they actually they do for the World Cup of Soccer. It's the they form country teams based on city teams. So like England has all these little city teams that play in either the Europe League or local England leagues. And then they pick the best one, the players from the teams and group them, and that's the England team for the World Cup.
Yeah, gotcha.
So I think it's similar to that, or the Olympics for us, because we don't really do that in the US, you know. We don't have
Right.
US teams for anything other than the Olympics.
Right.
I like how all the team names are alliterated, you know, Wimborne Wasps. Whatever cannons that you said, Chudley. Should I continue? They trudged up the misty field between the long rows of tents. Most looked ordinary. Their owners had clearly tried to make them as muggle-like as possible, but had slipped up by adding chimneys or bell poles. magical weather vanes. However, here and there was a tent so obviously magical, Harry could hardly be surprised that Mr. Roberts was getting suspicious. Halfway up the field stood an extravagant confection of striped silk, like a miniature palace, with several live peacocks tethered at the entrance. A little farther on, they passed a tent that had three floors and several turrets. A short way beyond that was a tent that had a front garden attached, complete with a bird bath, sundial, and fountain. "Always the same," said Mr. Weasley, smiling. "We can't resist showing off when we get them together. When we get together. Ah, here we are. Look at this. This is us." They had reached the very edge of the wood at the top of the field. Here was an empty space with a small sign hammered into the ground that read, "Weasley," spelled W-E-E-Z-L-Y. "Couldn't have a better spot," said Mr. Weasley happily. "The field is just on the other side there, or as close as we could be." He hoisted his backpack from his shoulders. "Right," he said excitedly. "No magic allowed, strictly speaking. Not when we're out in these numbers on Muggle land. We'll be putting up these tents by hand. Shouldn't be too difficult. Muggles do it all the time. Here, Harry, where do you reckon we should start?" Harry had never been camping in his life. The Dursleys had never taken him on any kind of holiday, preferring to leave him with Mrs. Fig, an old neighbor. However, he and Hermione worked out where most of the poles and pegs should go, and though Mr. Weasley was more of a hindrance than a help, because he thoroughly got overexcited when it came to using the mallet, they finally managed to erect a pair of shabby two-man tents. All of them stood back to admire their handiwork. Nobody looking at these tents would guess they belonged to wizards. Harry thought. But the trouble was that once Bill, Charlie, and Percy arrived, they would be a party of 10. Hermione seemed to have spotted this problem too. She gave Harry a quizzical look as Mr. Weasley dropped to his hands and knees and entered the first tent. "We'll be a bit cramped," he called, "but I think we'll all squeeze in. Come on, have a look." Harry bent down and ducked under the tent flap, and he felt his jaw drop. He had walked into what looked like an old-fashioned three-room flat, complete with bathroom and kitchen. Oddly enough, it was furnished in exactly the same sort of style as Mrs. Fig's house. There were crocheted cupboards on the mismatched chairs and a strong smell of cats. "Well, it's not for long," said Mr. Weasley, mopping his bald patch with his handkerchief and peering in at the four bunk beds that stood in the bedroom. "I borrowed this from the Perkins at the office. Doesn't camp much anymore, poor fellow. He's got lumbago. He picked up the dusty kettle and peered inside. "We'll need water. There's a tap marked on this map that the Muggle gave us," said Ron, who had followed Harry inside the tent and seemed completely unimpressed by its extraordinary inner proportions. "It's on the other side of the field." "Well, why don't you, Harry and Hermione, go and get us some water, then," said Mr. Weasley, handing over the kettle and a couple of saucepans, "and the rest of us will get some wood for a fire." "But we've got an oven," said Ron. "Why can't we just..." "Ron, anti-Muggle security," said Mr. Weasley, his face shining with anticipation. "When real Muggles camp, they cook on fires outdoors. I've seen them at it." "How are you doing, Boo? Should we continue or should we go to bed? You go. What do you think?" "It's up to you." After a quick tour of the girls' tent, which was slightly smaller than the boys, though without the smell of cats, Harry, Ron, and Hermione set off across the campfire with the kettle and saucepans. Now, with the sun newly risen and the mist lifting, they could see the city of tents that stretched in every direction. They made their way slowly through the rows, staring eagerly around. It was only just dawning on Harry how many witches and wizards there must be in the world. He never really thought much about those in other countries. Their fellow campers were just starting to wake up. First to stir were the families with small children. Harry had never seen witches and wizards this young before. A tiny boy, no older than 2, was crouched outside a large pyramid-shaped tent, holding a wand and poking happily at a slug in the grass, which was swelling to the size of a salami. As they drew level with him, his mother came hurrying out of the tent.
"How many times, Kevin? You don't touch Daddy's wand. Yuck!"
She had trotted on the giant slug, which had just burst. Her scolding carried after them in the still air, mingling with the boys. Little boys' yells.
"You bust slug! You bust slug!"
A short way farther on, they saw 2 little witches, barely older than Kevin, who were riding toy broomsticks that rose only high enough for the girls' toes to skim the dewy grass. A ministry wizard had already spotted them. As he hurried past Harry, Ron, and Hermione, he muttered distractedly, "In broad daylight, parents having a lion as foes." Here and there, adult wizards and witches were emerging from their tents and starting to cook breakfast. Some, with furtive looks around them, conjured fires with their wands. Others were striking matches with dubious looks on their face, as though sure this couldn't work. 3 African wizards were in serious conversation, all of them wearing long robes, and roasting what looked like a rabbit on a bright purple fire, while a group of middle-aged American witches sat gossiping happily beneath a spangled banner stretched between their tents that read, "The Salem Witches Institute." That's cute. Harry caught snatches of conversation in strange languages from inside the tent they passed, and though he couldn't understand a word, the tone of every single voice was excited. "Is it just my eyes, or has everything gone green?" said Ron. It wasn't just Ron's eyes. They'd walked into a patch of tents that were all covered with a thick growth of shamrocks, so that it looked as though small, oddly shaped hillocks had sprouted out of the earth. Grinning faces could be seen under those that had their flaps open. Then, from behind them, they heard their names.
"Harry, Ron, Hermione."
It was Seamus Finnegan, their fellow Gryffindor 4th year. He was sitting in front of his own shamrock-covered tent with a sandy-haired woman who had to be his mother, his best friend Dean Thomas, also of Gryffindor. "Like the decorations?" said Seamus, grinning. "The ministry's not too happy."
"Why shouldn't we show our colors?" said Mrs. Finnegan. "You should see what the Bulgarians have got dangling over their tents. You'd be supporting Ireland, of course," she added, eyeing Harry, Ron, and Hermione beadily.
When they had assured her that they were indeed supporting Ireland, they set off again, though, as Ron said, "like we'd say anything else surrounded by that lot."
"I wonder what the Bulgarians have got dangling over their tents," said Hermione.
"Let's go have a look," said Harry, pointing to a large patch of tents upfield, where the Bulgarian flag, white, green, and red, was fluttering in the breeze. And I think maybe we'll stop here, Boo. I love you so much, my kitty. The sweetest girl ever.